morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you are. This is Melissa Campanelli. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I am the host of today's live Retail Online Integration webinar titled, How Growth Hacking Can Increase Revenues by More Than $1 Million a Month, sponsored by MarketLive. Growth hacking refers to a marketing technique that uses creativity, analytics, and multivariate testing to generate massive and fast results for companies such as Facebook, Twitter, and Dropbox. Growth hacking also describes a wide variety of marketing activities, including everything from blogging and social campaigns to CRM automation and conversion optimization testing. In today's webinar, Leslie Hahn, a senior e-commerce senior commerce strategist at MarketLive, will discuss the growth hacking concept in depth and how it can be applied to all types of marketing. Then Chris Goward, an industry an industry conversion optimization thought leader and author of the best-selling book, You Should Test That, we'll show you how Build Direct use growth hacking, specifically conversion optimization, to increase revenues by more than $1 million a month, while also improving design and usability of their website at the same time. Before we get started, let me take a quick second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with a wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. So with that, and to get started, let me introduce Leslie Hahn from MarketLive, who will discuss growth hacking. Take it away, Leslie.
Thank you, Melissa. Anna's an e-commerce executive. She stumbled into the profession by way of a retail gig that she had during college, and for the most part, she really likes what she does. The company that she works for has above market expectations for online growth, but she has a budget to make it there. Her team is strong. Sure, they have the occasional snarky email or hostility about some perceived slight, but for the most part, they do play well in the sandbox together. The product on her virtual e-commerce shelves is something that she can be proud of. She doesn't hesitate to tell people at a cocktail party what she sells or who she works for. She's comfortable with the tools and tactics for her team to get the job done, and she knows how they all need to work together. She's doing everything right, and yet, underneath the surface, she feels like she can barely keep in front of the curve. There is always something new that she needs to know about, and that she's always one step behind competitors. She feels like it's not enough, and at times, is she enough? Have you ever thought, this isn't enough? Is it because I'm not enough? Well, I can speak from my 15-plus experience of being in this industry that I've absolutely had moments where I felt like I couldn't get ahead, couldn't make the number, and couldn't be the master of it all and make it work. And yet somehow the results that I've created are outstanding. Not only is the neck on the chopping block like Anne, but also consulting e-commerce and omnichannel clients across many verticals on the MarketLive platform as senior strategist. I'm part of a dedicated team of experts at MarketLive whose sole objective is to support our clients in creating growth. Day in, day out, we create growth. That's what we do, and it's the hat that I wear. MarketLive clients span all verticals. However, I'll say that I think there's a shared characteristic. And my experience of MarketLive clients is that they want to be the very best that they can be. And I totally love supporting them in being that. At MarketLive, we have definitely drank the growth Kool-Aid. We're not just a platform, we're a culture of growth and doing whatever it takes for our clients to be successful and feel supported while doing it. So technology plus drive equals above industry results. This past year alone, our clients eclipsed the industry during the rigorous holiday season at 2 times the industry average, and I can tell you that absolutely did not happen by happenstance. In working with client growth day in and day out, what I've learned in my journey is that often it's not about having the most budget or the shiny new tool. Those are fun. But the framework for creating success. And that is how this growth hacker approach came to life. Now, if this is a new term for you, growth hacker is what startups use to generate massive and quick results on a shoestring. It's why you use Facebook and LinkedIn. So if you've not embraced your inner growth hacker yet, your behavior has already, well, been hacked. I want to address the term hack because it definitely has a negative connotation for most folks. Hack isn't steal or take something unlawfully. Hack means to break the traditional hackles to create something new. And if growth hackers were a superhero, their power would be a singular, maniacal focus on whatever it takes to create the result. Now, growth hackers use the same tools that e-tailers do on a daily basis, SEO, SEM, social, multivariate testing, and analytics. So how are they able to produce double and even triple-digit growth when we're happy with a conversion rate north of 5%? Be a culture of trust. Be an organization of accountability. Be the reason for customers to want to leverage your product. Trust plus accountability plus leverage is massive results. Now let's talk about the life of a product. Well, buyers place the PO after the approval from the operations lead in finance. While we're waiting for the product, the finances create the pricing, IT generates the SKU, and then when we get the product, the photographer shoots the product, we have retoucher, marketing approves the selects, our copywriter writes the description, then it goes to our online merchandiser who publishes the product after I approved it, and the SEO analyst then adds keywords. Then we have cross-sells and upsells approved by the head buyer, and the head of marketing approves before pushing the final product live. Then, depending on what it is, we might send a curated email or add it to our Facebook feed or our PPC accounts. So how many people touch the product from inception to transaction? 11, 12, including me? Well, if selling product as quickly as possible was your objective, would you have 11, 12 people touching it from zero to live? Somehow in this e-commerce space, we've forgotten that time is a huge contributor to revenue and profitability. What if your singular objective was to get your product to sell as quickly as possible? Would you still have 11, 12 cooks in the kitchen? If you're not convinced of the power of time, then sign up for the flash sales, which are very much in vogue. Urgency is effective internally and creates consumer demand. Trust is one of the crucial underpinnings of growth hacking. The speed of trust is not only one of the most important levers to creating results, it's not esoteric. It's quantifiable, it's measurable, and it's buildable. Even if you do everything right, the right strategy, the right tools, without trust, you won't get massive results. An interesting way to think about conversion rate is actually as a trust metric. What percentage of total traffic did you successfully communicate trust in product, trust in store, trust in transaction, and trust in you? If you have the right butts in the right seats and they're trusted for their knowledge and wisdom, then why do multiple people need to approve? You can't say that you have trust when your process does otherwise. If your culture is not trust-based, then sticking a trust badge on the site as well, it's not really very trustworthy, is it? One of the coolest things about trust is that we can create it. We can create it inside, create it outside. And again, it's a prerequisite for growth hacker level results. There are four continuums: integrity, intent, capabilities, results. Now, if you address each of these four areas, you will increase trust both internally and externally and see a direct correlation in conversion rate and revenue. And I'll tell you, one of the coolest things about approaching optimization this way is that it feels good. It makes other people feel good because really, who wants to schlep a bunch of crappy product that's misrepresented and doesn't make customers happy? Have fun fighting those fires on Facebook. So, Anne, what's the team benefit of a product being live, of a sale, of an increased conversion, and Who's accountable and feels the economic impact if something doesn't sell? What corporate scorecard or KPIs or bonuses tied to? Listeners, I will share with you this, that I know modern salaries for talented e-commerce professionals are steep, but if you're going to compel the best people to extraordinary results, then create a relationship between compensation and results. Because the best people don't shirk from accountability, they crave it. Now, the growth hacker paradigm can be very scary for folks, especially when they really don't trust their people in their process. You can dip your toe in the hacker waters and prove that trust, accountability, and urgency is effective in creating the results that you want. Take a percentage of your marketing or a percentage of your product. Growth hack a product line, growth hack a community. You don't need to take this on all at once. A nice way to do this is 70% planned, 20% automated, and 10% agile or growth hacker. There's another crucial component in what I like to refer to as growth hackertude, and that's leverage. If you don't think it works, then stop using Facebook, Dropbox, and you can add LinkedIn to that list too. What would happen? How quickly would people reach out to you and, hey, what happened? Why aren't you on Facebook? What happened to LinkedIn? That is the impact of leverage. Leverage is the lever. It takes the trust, accountability, and urgency that you've created internally and externally and propels sales exponentially. This one is last in my discussion with you today because it's the other principles that need to be in place first. Your team has within them right now that amazing idea of how to leverage your product in new markets, in new ways. They may be afraid to share it or feel that there's no point in bringing it up because the company would never do it. That idea is the idea. The growth hacker exploration is a test, measure, adjust opportunity. Will you use multivariate testing to discover the right answer? Absolutely. And will you have many more wrong answers? Hopefully. Organizationally, is there permission to be wrong to find the right? This is crucial in discovering that sweet spot of opportunity. It's the vulnerability that turns the CYA environment into I can't wait to get to work. And that's ultimately how you're going to get and keep the top talent. The next part of our presentation will be a focus on the tactics and methods used on site by growth hackers in creating massive results. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris, who's going to focus on walking us through the next part of the presentation.
Great. Thanks, Leslie. And thanks, Market Live, for the invitation to join us here today. You know, that was a great intro, Leslie. Thank you for that. And I think you made some really good points about trust and especially vulnerability, the willingness to be wrong. And I'm going to show how important that is. I've got a couple examples today to show about conversion optimization successes and failures and how they can lead to success. So, first of all, the topic for today, for the presentation is how, I'm going to show an example how BuildDirect.com, an e-commerce retailer, earns an extra $1 million per month using conversion optimization. I'm going to show you frameworks that you can use to apply that to your websites and your retail businesses and get results like that as well. So I'm going to show you two frameworks today, as well as some case study, real-life examples. But first, before we get into that, we have a giveaway today, and everyone attending is going to be entered to win a copy of the book that I published last year called You Should Test That, and it's got 5-star reviews on Amazon, bestseller in retailing, and so you know, hopefully if you're on the line here, you'll get a chance to win that, and if not, though, you can always get a free chapter at youshouldtestthat.com. So let's take a look at the example. First of all, we're starting with BuildDirect. BuildDirect is the largest online retailer for heavyweight building supplies. Now, they have found a way through a big data logistics system to save massive amounts of money for their customers. And they actually have found an Amazon killer. Would you love to have an Amazon killer, right, in your business? Well, they found a way to beat Amazon at something Amazon can't do. Amazon's average shipping weight is 15 pounds. BuildDirect's average shipping weight is 1,500 pounds. They've found a way to win in heavyweight shipping, and if you ever get a chance to invest in them, I totally would. But I'm going to show you how, because they're a data-driven company, they knew that when they needed a website redesign, they couldn't do it the traditional way. They had been actually testing and optimizing for 3 years when they came to us at Wider Funnel and said they needed some improvement in their process. They needed a new way. They needed some systems in place, and they needed some better ideas. Because they're data-driven, their website ended up looking like sort of a, you know, a developer might have designed it, right? Like, it had some challenges. It had some opportunities for improvement. But they didn't want to redesign the traditional way. And that's because smart marketers know that website redesign through a traditional process is broken. It turns out 24% of marketers are extremely happy with their latest website redesign. 24%. Do you know how much money they spent on that? Right? 76%, not so much. So BuildDirect ended up redesigning their website through a process of conversion optimization, getting a beautiful new site design without the typical risks, and getting some massive improvement in the revenue. So I'm going to show you exactly how that worked, and frameworks that you can apply to your website as well. But first of all, who am I? Why am I talking to you about this? Why do I have these examples? Well, I started Wider Funnel in 2007 with the belief that web and digital and marketing agencies should prove their results, not just try to win awards. And so what we do is partner with high traffic companies to be an outsourced conversion optimization arm. We've been working with companies like Google and Magento and Iron Mountain and 1-800-Flowers, BuildDirect, of course, Salesforce, many more across industries, and all we do is conversion optimization. We're totally focused on running rapid cycle, iterative testing with conversion strategy. So how this worked for BuildDirect. Now, I'm going to show you the first framework here and how it applies to their situation, how it applies to yours as well. When we started working with BuildDirect, this was their homepage. And now you may have some opinions about whether this is a good homepage or a bad homepage, some things that might be wrong with it. But really, your opinions are yours, right? They're opinions. But how would you approach this to make improvements to it that actually improve the business results? I'm going to show you a framework to do that and then show you why it's important. So the model, the way we approach it is to put ourselves in the shoes of the customer. The shopper is sitting on that homepage, and they need to understand what they're buying, why they're buying it, and why it's a good value for them. There's a model that helps do that that we've developed over these 7 years called the LIFT model. And what it shows is the 6 conversion factors that are impacting your conversion rate right now. So the core of it is the value proposition. Now, everyone has their own definition of value proposition, but I like to think of it as an equation that's going on in the prospect's mind, in the shopper's mind, between the perceived costs of taking action, the perceived benefits they're going to get out of it. Now, if the perceived benefits are greater, they'll have motivation to act, and then you just need to facilitate that action. But if the costs are greater, they'll bounce right away. All of the other factors simply enhance or detract from that value proposition. So the relevance of the presentation includes the relevance to the source media on the page that they arrive on, particularly landing pages. Is it relevant and directly follow the scent trail from the ad or the button or the link they just clicked on? That's relevance. And it's also relevance through your website, relevance of the conversion path. And there's clarity of the presentation, which includes clarity of the eye flow and the imagery and the product descriptions and the call to action. And then factors that detract from it. Anxiety includes anything that creates uncertainty in the shopper's mind about taking action. Leslie, you mentioned the trust symbols. Well, we've actually done tests showing that trust symbols can improve conversion rates and sales, but they also can hurt sales if they're used inappropriately. We actually ran a test for a retailer that showed in the persistent site-wide add-to-cart area, the cart shopping cart area, adding a security symbol too close to that actually may have created anxiety and reduced sales by 2 to 3%. That's anxiety. And then there's distraction. Distraction is anything that redirects the shopper's attention from the primary message, the primary product, the primary call to action. It may be upsells and cross-sells that cause distraction. It may be graphic design that's too embellished. Anything or too much copy, too many questions about shipping. All of those things cause distraction. And then urgency. So why should they buy now? So these are the six factors that are impacting conversion rates on your website right now. Now, what do you do about it? Let's take a look at the example of BuildDirect's homepage. So this was the page they started with. And I'm going to show you some of the lift points that our strategists identified, and you may see some that apply to your website as well that you can take and test in your environment. So first, relevance. There's no headline to capture the scent trail. Looking at where people came from to arrive on this page, there's nothing that ties them in. It creates that relevance. And then there's clarity. The free samples of their flooring and countertops was one of their most important calls to action, but it wasn't prominent. A rotating banner on the homepage. How many of you have a rotating banner on your website? Virtually every time we've tested it, it hurts sales. A three-column layout causes visual distraction in a lot of cases. Value proposition, there's inconsistent design treatment, reduces credibility, right? That affects trust. Trust is a component of the value proposition of your business. Featured products. If you have featured products on your website, your shopper doesn't care. What does featured mean? Does that mean it's the best value? Does it mean it's just something that you want to get rid of? Why should they care? Ask yourself, from sitting in their shoes, what's in it for me? And then low price prominence undermines their core value proposition. So the low price should have been more prominent. That's one of their core value proposition points. So what do we do about that? Now, your job as an optimizer of your conversion rates or a growth hacker is to find out which of these problems are actual problems. Convert those into hypotheses. So if the problem is that, well, there's no clear headline of the value proposition, well, let's test that and try adding a headline and see if that works. So after running thousands of tests, what we've found is a strategy for how to create tests that create dramatic lift in sales as well as insights into the customer. So these are three variations that were tested of that homepage. Now, we tested many others as well, but these are three of them. And I'm going to get you to test your conversion skills here and find out which one is winning, which one delivers the best results. So take a look. A is flooring tiles. What we did is we created six tiles of the most popular flooring with price prominence, so larger prices that stood out. And if it looks busy, it's because we're seeing a larger version than what you would see in your screen when the fold is actually about halfway up that screenshot. Variation B is a category and subcategory list. So we created category tiles with subcategory links below in the middle column. And variation C, we kicked out the left column to give more space for more categories and subcategories. So we're aiming at a value proposition insight. Are people more interested in the price prominence of specific products or the breadth of products through their categories, or even more with the two column with more categories available? Now, I'm going to get you to test your skills and vote on which one you think won. Was it A, B, or C? So go ahead and put your vote in there. A is the category tiles, price prominence. B is more category product selection prominence. C is even more product selection prominence with the left column kicked out. So let's take a look at the votes. Are you able to see? All right. See the votes coming in. Sherry, are you able to see how many votes are coming in there? Go ahead and put your vote in.
59% of attendees have responded, Chris.
Great, perfect. So let's take a look at the results of what you thought. Here's the result. Oh, wow. So we've got, there it is. 65% of you voted for variation C, which is great. And looks like A and B are still having an arm wrestle there. So which one actually won? When we ran this test, now the way we do it is to make sure that it's a controlled concurrent test. So every visitor that arrives on the page would be randomly selected by a tool we've installed to see one of several different variations and then track their sales and revenue generation conversion rates. And it turns out that the majority of you are right. That variation C generated a 16.9% lift in sales revenue, that test alone. But we're not done there. There is no optimized page. So one test certainly alone does not create an optimized experience. From there, we test it again. Now, this variation one, we're going to test another one against it. Now, if you're trying to find the Where's Waldo difference, don't bother. They're both exactly the same. The only difference is that those links to the categories and subcategories were different. What we were testing is the number of steps in the conversion path that are needed to maximize sales. So in variation A, we had merchandising interstitial pages, so merchandising pages for each category and subcategory that gave the benefits of the product and product titles. Variation B, the second one, had a listing of all the products with filter and sorting capability. So ask yourself which one you think won. Now, when I show this example at conferences, invariably variation B, the second one, gets a vast majority of the votes because it makes sense. You're reducing the number of steps to get to the products and your ability to filter and sort it. But when we tested this, it turns out that the first one actually won. That was a 27% lift in sales, which is interesting. Now, that went contrary to our hypothesis, but that's okay. That's a good thing. And as Leslie said earlier, being willing to be wrong and being vulnerable is a core value of conversion optimization success. And what we found is by understanding that that merchandising page was important, we could then optimize that page in that template and continue A-B testing and optimization of that page to get an even better result for the business. So if you think it's just BuildDirect, you're wrong. Your website needs attention too. Of course it does. We all know. That's why you're on this call, right, to understand how to increase your sales using these methods. And you probably need a redesign, but you don't need a traditional redesign. Epic redesigns are risky, and I'm going to show you why. Here's what happens in a traditional website redesign process. The best of the web keeps getting better, right? Conversion rates and expectations of visitors are continuing to increase every day. Well, when you redesign your website, it's static, because what happens is that it's such a painful process. Usually it's over budget, it's delayed, it doesn't end the way you expected it to, and half the time conversion rates drop after you flip the switch live. And so it's such a painful experience, marketers want to avoid this. And so you've got 2 to 5 year gaps between your redesigns. So by default, your website is getting worse because expectations are getting better. I call this the wedge of suckiness, where your website, your retail environment continues to erode against the competition. And that's not even the worst part about the traditional website redesign, which I call the RSR, radical site redesign, is that when you have that terrifying day one morning where you need to flip the switch to this brand new website and you have no idea which of the 1,000 changes you've made, maybe your headline, your imagery, your contact forms, your cart path, your PDP product page templates, which of all these changes are going to impact the conversion rates positively or negatively? You have no idea because you're flipping the switch to a brand new experience. Advanced retailers don't do this. The best way to redesign your website is something I call the evolutionary site redesign strategy. And the way it works is that websites that and businesses that engage in this process are continuously improving and optimizing through iterative rapid cycle ABN testing to find out what works best and to continually improve conversion rates. So think about, thinking about Amazon again. When was the last time Amazon redesigned their website? Well, they've never redesigned their website, and yet they continue to advance. The reason is because they're continuously redesigning their website through continuous iterative testing. All of the features that they put out are tested heavily to find out which ones increase sales. So how does this work for BuildDirect? I'm going to show you how we actually separated content from design aesthetic to test site redesign and how you can do that as well. So in what we did is we looked at BuildDirect's site-wide templates and noticed and saw for them that the main elements that were contributing to the design appeal, the design aesthetic, was in the navigation in the left column and in the right column. So we separated those into components, created a new design for the website, and then took chunks of it to test and iterate toward that design and find out which elements actually improved. So now you can see between these two variations, this on the left was the old left column design, and then our design for conversion designers redesigned it and tested that left column site-wide and ended up with a 16.2% lift in conversion rates. Sorry, that's a little bit overlapped on the screenshot, but that test alone, and that was a site-wide conversion rate and revenue lift. Just by changing the design of that navigation, what it did is it made it more appealing, more approachable to shoppers, and allowed them to find their product more easily and purchase more. That's without changing any content. Now, then, of course, we're able to continue the improvement, look at the right column and redesign that through a test, and then the header navigation site-wide, actually changing the design appearance, as well as iterations on the order of the categories and the subcategories within that. At the end of the day, through that process, what they got was a redesign of the templated elements as well as the content, and ended up with a dramatic redesign. So now, you know, obviously their website looks entirely different, but they had no risk that normal websites do through their redesign process. And you can do this exact same thing. Conceptually, it's very simple. What you're doing is A/B testing to find out which elements actually improve. And of course, the result is not just a beautiful new website, but after 12 months, they ended up with $1 million revenue lift per month directly attributed to the results of controlled A/B tests throughout their templates. Now, the reason, of course, we're telling this story is because it's a great result, but this isn't a unique result. Now, I'm going to show you another model with another, and this is where we're getting into the numbers and to prove that this type of a strategy actually works well and how it works, especially when you think about the idea of losing tests. Okay, let's take a look at this result. So this was another website that WiderFunnel was working on for the last 3 years or so we've been working on this website. So we ran, now focusing on one conversion path, okay, there's one conversion revenue path that we're working on along with a bunch of other paths, but I'm focusing on this one for now. The first test we ran on that conversion funnel, we got 18.8% lift, which is great, right? 18.8% revenue lift, that directly impacts the business. It's a very important part of their revenue. The next round got a 0% lift. So you may be discouraged by that. Don't be discouraged, because the next round got another 11.8% on top of the 18.8, and then two more rounds of zero. Now, this was being tested along with other paths, but after 6 months of testing, this was one of the most important revenue paths for the company. So what we wanted to do is to take a step back and say, now, after running these five tests over 6 months, is it sustainable? Because we often get this question. Is, okay, you're running a bunch of tests and we get some wins and some not wins, but do the wins actually stick around? Like, how sticky are these conversion lift results? So what we did is said, okay, let's take the original page back at the bottom when we started, right? So, when we add this up cumulatively, the total result should be 32.8% lift. So what we did is we said, okay, let's take the original page from 6 months ago and the latest winning page, and do a simple A/B test against them to see if this cumulative result is actually consistent. It turned out that after 6 months, the A/B test from the original and the latest winning one was 36.8% lift, which is within statistical significance of the mathematical lift, what it should have been, which is great, right? That validates that, yeah, the result is sticky, and also it doesn't degrade. We're not going to stop there. We'll continue testing, of course, on that page because there is no optimized page, and it's a strategy of continuous improvement. So then, look at that, two more inconclusive tests, then an 11.4% lift, and another 19.7% lift, and another 13.4. That's on the same conversion path after 12 months of testing. The mathematical lift, if you multiply all these together, ends up at 106.9%. So now we're getting a little bit risky because mathematically we should be doubling the revenue from this conversion path, right? Well, we're gonna put our neck out there and say, okay, let's take the original page from when we started 12 months ago, test the latest winner from that last 13.4% lift, and A/B test them against each other. Now, what do you think happened? Well, it ended up showing 123.7% lift from that A/B test, comparing the 12-month starting point to the 12 months later winning result. Now, again, that's statistically within significance of each other, showing that, again, you know what, even after 12 months, that first test that we ran and the second test and the third test are still impacting conversion rates and still lifting their revenue. Okay, so we're going to go even further. Was that just a fluke? Okay, you went a whole year and you A/B tested it. We're going to try it again in year two on the same conversion funnel that we've been optimizing for the last 12 months. Now check this out. Got another 7.3% lift on the same funnel. This is year two, another 15.9, another 12.8, and then we hit a dry spell. Six rounds of inconclusive, no winner test. Now we might have thought, well, you know what? We've hit the ceiling on this one. And a lot of people would throw in the towel and say, you know what? Conversion optimization was fine for a while, and we hit the maximum. We hit our best possible page, right? But no. We listen to Winston Churchill, and we never give up. And you may not understand, if you haven't done a lot of A/B testing, how painful it is to have six inconclusive tests in a row, right? It gets a little discouraging in there. But the way you could design tests to never be discouraged by a losing test is to aim for insights from your tests. Because after gathering the insights from all of these tests and structuring the tests in such a way that they deliver insights about the customer, whether or not there's a revenue lift, we ended up with that 27.7% winning result. Again, cumulatively, over the second year, we had another 79.2% mathematical lift. So are we going to prove it again? Well, let's try it. We took the original page from that 12-month mark and another one from the end of the 24 months of testing, and the results showed an additional 90.3% lift over the first year result. So essentially we've doubled it, doubled revenue, and then nearly doubled revenue again. Mathematically it works, and in the actual revenue flowing into the bank, it works as well. So let's take a step back now and look at how this worked as a strategy, and then I'll get into the details of the two frameworks you can use, okay? So I'm going to buzz through this. How it looked is we just saw the mathematical framework, but for the same client, we ran this first test. This was experiment 1.1 on their homepage. Through this conversion path, we ended up with testing five different areas of the page, isolating them to find out which ones impacted conversion rates. Now you'll see some of these green and red and orange lines coming off of that. So that's showing which component contributed to the wins, which component did not, and which ones are inconclusive. Now, from those insights, then, we lead to the next round, experiment 1.2, where we tested six more components based on those insights. Now, you'll see underneath it says the first result got 7.37% lift, then a 15.92, and then a 24.22% lift. Now, we're starting to see another stream on a content page coming in above it that's feeding more insights into the following rounds of tests. We continue the test cycle. This becomes, then we add in another stream, segmenting desktop versus mobile, and the insights from each of these tests feed, cross-pollinate between the different templates, between the different segments, between the different user journeys and experiences, with the end goal of maximizing revenue and continuously improving revenue, as well as understanding the customer by testing what they actually do and not just what they say they're going to do. So you can see this is just 4 pages. Well, we end up in a lot of cases with you know 6 or 10 priority pages to focus on. And so you can obviously see that it gets complicated. And that's why you need, as Leslie said, you need dedicated resources who know what they're doing, right? You've got to pay for good expertise to be able to manage these kind of insights. It can't just be on the side of someone's desk. So I'm going to show you is the process you can use to build in this strategy into your company and get these kind of results. It doesn't just happen alone. There's 2 main questions you need to answer. Where should I test? And what should I test? I'm going to show you how this fits within the process we use at Wider Funnel. And you can take whatever you want from this process and apply it to your business. You'll take some components. You may want to leave some others. But we've learned, if nothing else, that the process is critical to getting the right results. And so the way we approached it at Wider Funnel is to split it into 2 phases, starting with the conversion optimization strategy phase, where we're looking, it's a messy process of understanding the voice of the customer data, qualitative data, marketing analysis, the web analytics, right? Really digging in and finding out how people are using the website, as well as expert heuristic analysis of strategists that have a lot of experience, putting this all together to prioritize where are the opportunities for improvement. And I'm going to show you in a moment the PI framework that you can use within this strategy to do this as well. And then from that strategy, this is a prioritization strategy, we move into phase 2, which is rapid cycle iterative testing based on hypotheses built with the LIFT model. And now there are frameworks you can use. The LIFT model is proven to be one of the best frameworks out there. It's the most popular conversion optimization framework on the planet. And the reason is because it puts you in the perspective of your customers and asking powerful questions to get the best results and insights. Now, step 7, I'll tell you now, is the most important step in this process, where you analyze the results of your tests, generate insights that feed into further improvements that we just looked at, as well as into the strategy prioritization. So the first question you need to answer is, where should I test? So to answer that question, you need a prioritization framework. The prioritization framework we use, you can just adopt this and use it yourself. We call it PI, the PI prioritization framework. And what it looks at are the 3 factors that influence which of your customer touch points is the biggest opportunity to test and improve, to focus attention on. So potential looks at what is the potential of the conversion rate lift in an area of your website. You can understand that by looking at your web analytics, looking at your voice of customer data, looking at your heuristic analysis. Essentially, you're trying to answer the question, what's the crappiest page on my website, right? And ranking those in order. And then you look at importance. Which pages affect the most visitors? Which ones have the highest cost traffic coming in? Which ones generate important revenue? And then ease, and that includes technical and sometimes political ease, right? Which pages are going to be the easiest to get up and running? Which tests can you run with the minimum interference from the technical or the political sphere? And then essentially you rank all of the touch points, all of the templates, all of your landing pages and areas of the website, and simply put them in a chart and rank potential importance and ease on a 0 to 10, 1 to 10 scale, give them an average rating, and there you go. What you do is you resort that and end up with your testing prioritization for the next however long. It should be an ongoing reshuffling based on the data that you collect from real A-B tests as well. So that's a simplistic view, but essentially what Wider Funnel does with all of our clients when we prioritize where to test. Then you end up with something that looks like this, right? You've got all your priorities being tested concurrently or sequentially and feeding insights back and forth. So you're staring at a page, and you say, okay, we've got our prioritization. Now what do I do with that page? If I know the product detail page is the most important page on the website, the biggest opportunity, what do I test there? That's the right question to ask. And I'll tell you one thing, that question, what should I test, what hypotheses should I pose, directly impacts your conversion rate optimization success. The power of your hypotheses directly impacts the power of your results. Now, you can come up with a list of all kinds of things right? There's tactics all over the place. In fact, you can Google right now conversion optimization tips, right? We've got one on our website, 31 conversion optimization tips at Wider Funnel. And you can read that and you'll find a bunch of ideas. But which ones apply to your website? You can't test everything. And going out and just looking for tips is a waste of time. And it actually, because those tips and what other people say work, don't take into account your context. Your customers are different than others. So replace guessing, replace just randomly searching for tips with a framework. So we've looked at the Lyft model that shows the 6 conversion factors. This is, we're finding, very powerful for putting yourself in the mind of your shopper, identifying the barriers to conversion, and then creating hypotheses from those that actually solve customer shopper problems. Now, within these 6 factors, there are actually 27 sub-factors, and you can find more about this online. If you want to just Google Wider Funnel Lyft Model, you'll find articles and examples on there as well for more information. We've got limited time here today, and I wanted to give you what the most important components so that you can go and educate yourself more about how to use these types of frameworks to get the best results. Okay, so think about the value proposition on each page, the urgency, anxiety, distraction, clarity, and relevance, and ask yourself, which of these components will your customers be facing? And then you'll find out which ones have the biggest impact on your sales that then lead you to emphasize those even more. Okay, so before we leave today, we're going to have a few minutes for Q&A. I want to leave you with 3 keys to success to keep in mind. Okay, if you only remember one thing, first, replace best practices with tested practices. Best practices don't work as a rule because best practices do not take your context into consideration. We've seen many tests where the exact same tactic on one website is the exact opposite of what works on another. And by testing those things, we can infer beneath them why their customers are different and why they respond differently, and that leads to understanding the customer. Number 2 is focus on the process. By building the right process in place and trusting the process, you will get results. And the 3rd is test smart for 2 things. Tests should always aim for revenue lift, profit lift, and insights about the customer. If you're only doing one, a lot of people are out there just testing and they're taking the wins and then, you know, implementing the new winning pages, not even thinking about how to compare between the variations and look for insights about the customer. And that's where you get even better results that build on each other. Okay, so 3 keys to success. And again, another reminder that if you're on the call and you've made it this far, that's great. We're going to have a drawing for a free copy of You Should Test That, which essentially contains everything I knew up until a year ago. So give that a shot. And if it's worth $25, you can also pick it up on Amazon as well. So, all right, we do have a few minutes for questions. If you want to learn more, by the way, then we also have an email address that you can, you know, I'm sure a lot of questions have been raised. We may not get to them all. Email iwant@widerfunnel.com. And you can also find out, you know, if you're interested in this as a strategy and if you qualify to use the Wider Funnel system, go ahead and email to us there and we'll get you sorted.
Yes, I'm going to jump in. Thanks so much, Chris. That was great. Excellent presentation. And also thank you so much to Leslie for some great points at the beginning too. So we do have some questions that have come in, so I want to make sure to get them in. Make sure to have them be answered. So actually the first one came in, and this is going to be directed to Leslie. You talked at the beginning a lot about growth hacking. How can growth hacking techniques benefit small businesses?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. And, you know, I think that where that really comes from is so much light and publicity is shed on these large companies who've created such massive results that we don't realize that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs at their core are growth hackers. So these are absolutely applicable to small business. You know, if anything, I think that some of the more small, nimble companies have the ability to ideally get sign off and alignment and then execution on this stuff more quickly than some of the big guys. The one caveat to that is that ideally being a small business does not mean that they don't invest in top talent, because that's one of the key components in this, obviously, is having the right butts in seats, and that they're going to be the folks that are not only going to drive the result, but want to be accountable to creating that result.
Great. That's a good point. Very good point, especially for small businesses. Another one that's really interesting around growth hacking, I think, is, and this is also for Leslie, do you feel that the creativity behind growth hacking comes from like a place of desperation?
Desperation. You know, what's really interesting to me about that question is that, you know, one of the reasons that these startups often don't provide a lot of budget for these types of large results is actually to create the pressure that facilitates creativity. So I guess, you know, in this instance, when we're talking about desperation, it's on purpose, you know, and yeah, is it frenetic? Yeah, totally. Is it pushing folks to be uncomfortable, to create an uncomfortably fast result? Definitely. So desperation, I guess I would think of it more as like a crock pot, you know, that you're really just trying to create a pressure to create a larger result.
That's a good way to look at it, a positive spin on it. Great. We did have some questions come in specifically though for Chris's presentation. And one was about how the fact that landing pages do not have too much sort of data on them, so how could they be sort of part of the A-B testing area?
How landing pages can be part of testing?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, very little. Talking about how there's very little content. I see the question. There's very little content on landing pages.
Mm-hmm.
So landing pages don't necessarily have to have very little content. In fact, we've worked with a lot of companies who use SEO as a strategy, and you do need to have good content on landing pages in a lot of cases. But that's actually a good test hypothesis, and in fact, we found different results on that test looking at the spectrum of the amount of content needed, because sometimes a long copy page can work very well if it's written properly from a conversion persuasion perspective. Sometimes a shorter copy landing page actually does work better. But don't assume that so-called best practice, a lot of people are out there, you're right, promoting that you don't need a lot of content on the landing page, you just focus on the call to action. That's not necessarily true, and even if it does produce conversions, it might, and especially for leads, it might be lower quality conversions. So people want enough information to understand what they're buying and make a good decision, and often you'll have happier customers that way.
Great, excellent. Also, another question came in about the lift model that you talked about. What is your ideal sample size when performing rapid conversion optimization?
Right. So that sounds like it's asking about how long tests should run, how much traffic you need to run these tests, and it depends on a few factors. One is the amount of traffic you get, the amount of conversions you get, your conversion rate, and the difference in conversion rate between the variations. So as a rule of thumb, generally we end up needing between 100 and 1,000 conversions, like actual purchases, per variation to get a result. Now, obviously that's a wide range, but there's fewer conversions needed if you test dramatically. So if you have a large difference in the conversion rate between the variations, then it'll complete faster. And that's just a statistical significance calculation that you can do to understand if you've got significance.
Okay, great. Another one came in. The person is a little bit confused about how you can A/B. Sort of a tactical question. How can you test A/B test multiple home pages while still keeping the site online? Like, how do you kind of what goes on in the background? What's the magic?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's become very easy in the past few years to do this. A lot of times in the past, people would have to design a new page, implement it on the staging server, get it into the production server, and then look at analytics before and after to see which one had a higher conversion rate. That's not needed anymore, and in fact, it never worked because there's so many other influences when you use that pre and post before and after method with the season, day of week seasonality and offers in market and competitive effects and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't work. So the new tools that are available allow you to simply put a little piece of JavaScript in your page and then inject code on the fly that changes the page for different visitors. So the tools are very reliable now to be able to do that in a controlled method that that means that every visitor arriving on the page is selected to see different variations concurrently. So they're all the different page designs are running and using a testing tool that's designed for A-B testing, you can just inject code on the fly so that different people will see different variations, and then their conversion rates to revenue, to sales, to average order value are all tracked for each of those buckets of different designs for the homepage.
Perfect. What analytics are most valuable to sort of understand website and cart behavior?
Oh, analytics.
There
are a lot of different analytics you want to look at, depending on how your site is structured. Essentially, what you want to find are thinking about use analytics for building your prioritization and your strategy. So thinking about the PI framework, right, how to prioritize where to test, your analytics will tell you which of your pages or templates are getting the most visitors, which ones are generating the most revenue, and which ones have the highest bounce rates or exit rates. Those are going to be just a few of the sort of top line metrics you're going to want to look at to prioritize where to test. And you also can understand a little bit about your customers' expectations by seeing which pages do they go to and then revert out of. Sometimes, for example, I like to look for something I call periscoping, where you'll see a lot of visitors going into your category pages, clicking on a link, ending up at a product page, and then back to the category page, back to a product, back to the category page. And what they're doing is they're just popping up, periscoping, out of that page to find what they're looking for. And if they're doing that a lot, it means they're not finding what they want. And maybe there's an opportunity for improvement on that category page.
Okay, perfect. And I think we just have time for one more question. And basically, one of our listeners wants to know does main page A-B testing or A-B testing in general, does it cause any problems with Google rankings?
No. In fact, we are at WiderFunnel, we are Google authorized consultants for Google Analytics and their Google Experiments product. And we've asked them that question several times, and they have told us publicly that they encourage A-B testing and multivariate testing using these testing tools. And so if your tests are set up properly and that you're not trying to use them for cloaking, then they totally support it and do not penalize websites for doing that.
Okay, perfect. That's really helpful. Okay, well, I think we're just about running out of time. So I wanted to, first of all, thank MarketLive for sponsoring this wonderful event, and Leslie for her great comments at the beginning of the presentation. And I also want to thank Chris Goward for his great presentation, and also to all of the attendees who have stuck around and listened to the webinar. If you have any questions at all, there's going to be a survey that's going to pop up on your screen right away. So could you please answer some of those questions? It'll be very helpful for us in terms of our webinars down the line. And with that, I'd like to say thanks to everybody and have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.